Hello, it's great to have you with me. I'm Kim Clyden, former ABC radio presenter and children's book author, creating a community of people who care about children. How do we nurture creative, connected, resilient, emotionally intelligent, and empowered children? And they say it takes a village. So if you're feeling overwhelmed by the responsibility, you're not alone. We're surrounded, though, by people who can support us, your family, friends, and professionals, who all play an influential role in shaping our children. Imagine if your parents, teachers, relatives, or carers told you another story. Your life story would be completely different. I believe we can change the narrative for our children, but to do that, we need to change our story. The information provided in this episode is not intended as professional advice. They are personal views of my guest and do not constitute medical or professional advice. Always consult with a qualified healthcare provider for any health concerns you may have. Recently, I discovered the significant effects trauma has had on my life. Childhood trauma is more common than you think. Children who experience a distressing or harmful event or series of events can live with lasting negative effects on their emotional, mental, and physical well-being. These events can include abuse, neglect, witnessing violence, experiencing accidents, or natural disasters. It's crucial to recognize that a child's response to trauma can vary. And even seemingly minor events may be overwhelming for a young child. Whilst identifying and addressing trauma early can mitigate long-term effects, there are also other considerations to be aware of. Firstly, that the trauma may not reveal itself until many years after the event and may be triggered by seemingly unrelated circumstances later in life. My guest today is a mother and integrated mental wellness coach, Barb Hill. She's here to share how her childhood experience shaped the rest of her life and continues to influence how she shows up. I'd like to welcome you, Barb, to What We Teach Our Children. Thank you so much for joining me here today in the studio.
My absolute pleasure.
Where I'd really love to start seeking to get to know you today is probably in your childhood. What was it about your childhood that helped you find a path in life?
Great question. So for me, I always say that I was born a survivor because I was actually born at 26 and a half weeks gestation. So for 1979, as of recording, I'm 46. So I say to people, I was born a survivor. I was meant to be here for a reason. And my purpose is quite large. I've overcome a lot of various traumas through my childhood. My parents actually split up just before I was born. And it was, I guess you could say, quite colourful. I've done a lot of healing, a lot of work to get to where I'm at today. So I don't do the trauma label real well or victim mindset real well. But yeah, I never actually found my birth father until I was 20. So I grew up not knowing who my father was, though we've reconnected now and I'm actually seeing him tomorrow, so which is really cool. I'm heading up because I'm Torres Strait heritage and we've got the Coming of the Light ceremony tomorrow. So my mum remarried shortly after I was born and I'm the oldest of four. I have a sister to same mum, different dads, and brother and sister to my dad and my awesome stepmum.
Quite a big family by comparison with others.
Yeah, however, I've always been the black sheep and just never fitted in anywhere because I don't have a relationship really with any of my siblings because I was the daughter to the first marriage. So, and through that, then I also did sadly experience a lot of trauma growing up by my stepfather. It's my truth and I stand proudly in that because I had copped a lot of pushback from family talking about it. And I'm like, that's why people struggle because they don't speak up about it. However, all the things I went through and even through schooling, I was the shy, quiet one and just focused on my grades and my head was in books all the time. Through that though, I was subsequently bullied a lot at school and struggled to fit in until that miraculous age of grade 9 where the kids, you know, take you under their wing and you go down the back to the tennis court and you smoke the cigarettes down there and all of a sudden I was cool and I belonged. Through that though, a lot of other stuff happened, but No, it's all shaped me to who I am and why I do the things I do today, because it's that building block. I can't talk about what I do now if I haven't experienced it.
As an integrative mental wellness coach, how do you describe what you do?
I love it because I've done my NLP trainings, which is neuro-linguistic programming, and I've done my master practitioner level of that. And quite honestly, NLP saved my life. So I'd gone through, I mean, I'm sure we'll touch on a little bit later, there's a lot of stuff happened in my life, and I was in the system for quite a long time, mental health system. So 2015, I actually had attempted to end my life and landed in the hospital here, thus beginning those weekly appointments and all the medications and all the labels. And then after a few years, and also back then I couldn't speak, I had a severe stutter, I'd gotten clean off drugs and alcohol and my body shut down, I'd had a breakdown, and I just, like, my mind, body, soul was really disconnected and I struggled to speak. And at the time my children referred to me as the rapper, because if anything with in the or on the, it was a real challenge to get out. And especially trying to give a phone number out when you've got a stutter is quite interesting as well. However, through that then I discovered NLP through Tony Robbins, as corny as it is. And also back then I suffered extremely with anxiety. I had two support services. So one of my support workers used to actually bring me here to the library. That was my peopling. That was all I could manage back then. And I got a Tony Robbins book, and then I discovered NLP, and the rest is history. And that's why I think, because it's helped me so much, I just want to help everybody. And I remember my coach, when I ended up signing up to a coaching program, and they talk about knowing your niche, and she said, you got to know the people you want to help. And I remember sitting there clearly saying, I just want to help everybody. And she said, you can't help everybody. You have to know your niche. And now I had a moment earlier this year, actually, one 10th year of my suicide attempt, my serious one. And coincidentally, on the eve of my 10th anniversary, I also received a nomination for the local Australia Day Awards as well. So it was a really big time of reflection for me. And I thought, the journey I came to, it'd be criminal to not use my experiences to help other people. I don't like using the term of mental illness, and I don't like being boxed into one niche. So hence the name Integrated Mental Wellness Coach.
You mentioned earlier about the stigma associated with, you know, speaking about these types of things, especially when we were young, which causes a lot of people to shut down. Where did you find the courage to speak and to find help?
I tried numerous times when I was a teenager to ask for help, but it was incredibly difficult. And then I was really led to believe no one would believe me anyway. And when I did come out to family and asking for help, I was shut down really quick. No, it didn't happen. Even now to this day, I have a partner, but, you know, I've been divorced. I struggled with relationships, and it's all just the journey I took really stems from a lot of that trauma I experienced, because it wasn't a one-off situation. It occurred over years. Through that, though, I guess I have to really bring it back to the NLP, because it wasn't until I did NLP that I found my voice and my courage to step up. Because through counselling, and I'm not dismissing counsellors in any way, shape or form, because counselling did start my journey in being heard. At least I was heard and I want to say held, and I had a safe space to speak. Then began the healing with that and speaking up. However, being in the coaching space, that was a real defining shift. And it was like, okay, well, this has happened. How are you going to move forward?
I often reflect on when people are talking about their childhood experience, how that shaped the parent or the adult, you know, that they become. And you just mentioned you've been married. What do you think you took from, you know, your childhood experience and the example that maybe your mum and dad's relationship left you with, that may have conditioned you to a certain belief?
Well, it's interesting in that I mean, I married we're actually friends now. It took us a long time to get to that stage, though. And we went to school together. So we were 18 when we hooked up, and it was just one of those things that happened. And everyone around us was getting married at the time, and it was just sort of like we just did it. And although we were blessed with 5 beautiful children, so certainly no complaints there. However, I feel that my parenting, there's been a lot happen. I was the mum that and the housewife that would even iron the tea towels at one point. And then I lost my 3rd daughter. So then my parenting wasn't the greatest after that. Yeah, I'm certainly far from mother of the year during that time.
How did you lose your daughter?
So my daughter, Charlie, she was my 3rd child. I had them all 15 months apart.
As you do.
Get them out of the way.
Yep. I think it's a generational thing.
It's actually great.
It is good.
It's great because they were all friends and all, you know, it was just like a little conga line.
And you can just keep the nappies. Yeah, and everything going. Yeah.
And they all entertain each other. However, my daughter, Charlie, she's my forever 15-week-old. She was born prematurely at 7 weeks early. However, I look now at that I got another 7 weeks with her. You know, ultimately, but she passed away to SIDS, which is sudden infant death syndrome. That was the 3rd of March, 2005. I often, you know, say the day that Charlie died, a piece of my heart died, and it changed the trajectory of everything forever. And I will say, like, I got support from what is now called Red Nose, but back then was SIDS and Kids, and they were amazing. And it's because it's that, like, 3 a.m., you can't sleep, you're stressed, it's, you know, I had a 2-year-old and a 4-year-old almost, you know, to help. And other people were like, oh, you've got your other children to live for. But I just felt like I failed as a mum and as a wife, because back then my marriage was already on the rocks. It was a real struggle. But Red Nose were magic and they helped so much. However, then I did go down the path of drugs and alcohol to medicate and to cope. And I also got into adopting horses, actually. I adopted a thoroughbred ex-race horse, and he was due for the dogger's truck, and that was my first Mother's Day after losing Charlie. I adopted him, my big baby, because I just needed something other than drugs and alcohol. But that then did suck me back into that vortex, and I subsequently was really on a rocky path. And in the words of my counsellor at the time that I was seeing through SIDS and Kids, I remember him saying, well, I certainly grieve with spunk, because it was nothing textbook really. And then I shortly after that found out I was pregnant with my double rainbows. I was blessed with twins after losing Charlie, and they're now 19. But it's a heck of a ride. And I want to say I pulled my head in while I was pregnant with the twins, and then it was when they got to 15 weeks, I felt like I just fell apart again. And I mean, it's terrible to say, however, I just felt like, why get attached? They're going to go as well, kind of thing. It was a really weird. Looking back, I wish I had gotten more help back then, or that people recognised that I needed help. Instead, people were almost
afraid to say anything.
Yeah, and it was just, I was really in that world of drugs and alcohol, partying. It was like, yeah, let's go out Friday night, find a babysitter and get wasted. And that was how I dealt with it. And people let me get away with that rather than someone being a bit tough on me back then, which would have, maybe I wouldn't have listened. However, no one even tried.
I think it's one of those spaces, you know, we were raised through the 60s, 70s era where you didn't air your dirty laundry. You know, you kept things to yourself and you often wouldn't invite yourself into someone's life. And this is, I think, where we've got to with DV. My heart breaks for people like you who lose a child. It's unimaginable to me. I can't imagine what it must be like. Why did you feel like you had failed as a mother and a wife and weren't a good parent?
Well, all the SIDS guidelines say to sleep baby on their back and no cot bumpers. And she was my 3rd. And when you've got 3 kids, 3 and under, you do anything to, you know, so the baby's sleeping and you get the rest. And she was born preemie, and in the hospital she was on her tummy a lot. So she settled on her tummy. And because she was so little, she'd wriggle and put her little arm and leg out the side of her cradle. She was in a cradle at the time. So I put a cot bumper in so she wouldn't get stuck. And even when she passed, she was nowhere near that. But I blamed myself because I thought if she was on her back, she may have survived. And if she didn't have a cot bumper, she may have survived. And we also know that babies do die still when they're on their backs and no cot bumper. However, at the time, that was in my head. I felt like I was to blame because I didn't have her on her back.
What sort of impact do you think it's had on your other children?
Oh, honestly, well, I'll start with the twinnies. So what ended up happening was when, like, my marriage went quite rocky, and I literally, when the twins were about 2.5, I just was really lost and literally ran away like something in the movies. I wrote a note, waited for my husband to get home from work, and left a note, and I left. And I'd actually met someone else who was going to save me from all my demons. And I ran away back up to the Burdekin with him because I felt like I was just, everyone was better off without me here. And here being in Mackay. And also my husband's family lived literally across the road. So and the school was at the end of the street. So I felt in my head that the kids were safe, secure. In that mindset I was in, I really truly believed everyone was better off without me. So I ran away, and, you know, that was the dumbest thing I ever did, really. But at the time, that was all I could see.
It's the fight, flight or freeze, isn't it?
Yes, and that seems to be a common occurrence in my world. But through that, obviously, we had a number of years of disjointed parenting. Mm. But then moving forward, the twins probably got it the best out of all of them, because whenever I could see them, every moment counted. Through that, then I'd experienced DV and horrible relationship after relationship, and I did that as a form of self-punishment as well. When I came back to Mackay after one quite severe instance of DV, I just wanted to be a mum to my kids, and it just happened 50-50, but that was a few years of fighting the family law court system. Through that, though, the twinnies were great. My other son, he's now 22, and he lives in Brisbane now. But back then, he was such a mummy's boy. We were so close. But, you know, when you're fighting through the family law court system, and it's a slinging match ultimately with both sets of parents. But then my oldest daughter, she struggled the most. She really, really did. And even our relationship was quite strained for some time, because I'm certainly not the person I was back then now. But it's been reconnected and we're on the path forward, which is great.
Have you had an opportunity to have this conversation with any of your children?
Yes.
Yeah?
Yes.
And how do you think that changed the dynamic of your relationship?
Well, I have a beautiful memory of my youngest. Her name's Abby. We were all sitting in my room, and she would have been about 8 or 9 at the time. And she sat there, and I was doing the old, "I'm sorry, I'm not a great mum," blah, blah, blah. I was really quite down then. And she said, "That's okay, Mum. We know that when you lost Charlie, you lost yourself." And I'll never forget that, because I remember at that moment, it was almost like a lightning bolt hit me, because I thought, so here's an 8-year-old who totally gets it, yet adults don't seem to get that. And that was really what it was. Mm-hmm. If I'd gotten the help in dealing with my grief with losing Charlie, I feel things would have turned out so much differently. But I just never got the help. And back then, there wasn't the help there is now either. So,
given though you've had all of these experiences and that you work in that field, what role has your experience played in understanding and therefore helping others who may be struggling with alcohol, drugs and DV?
I'm sitting here smiling because I'm thinking of a few clients. It's because I get it and I understand, and I'm far from clinical when I work with my people, because I can relate. However, I don't put my experiences onto them, but I can, when they're talking, I really listen and get it and don't judge. Because if I have a mum sitting there and she's sharing her journey with her own substance use and she's feeling bad, I can see that for her that's the solution to her problem. I just need to help her find a new solution, ultimately. Whether it be a husband, a wife, anybody, that's how I really look at it. And zero judgment, and just really try and help them build and grow that self-confidence back. And it's just a beautiful journey to walk beside them when they share that with me, because people coming to me don't come to me as a first port of call. They're often coming to see me now as a last port of call, and they're also feeling suicidal a lot of the time. And it's being that person that throws the rope down the hole to them to drag them out. I'm really blessed to have had a couple of people that were like that for me during my recovery journey, and I'm still blessed to know them today. So yeah.
I can't believe how many people I've spoken with, even just on this podcast, let alone my media career, but who have been through adversity, trauma, you know, layers, and some deep and some what you'd consider, you know, most people go through, like whether it was corporal punishment or physical abuse, or, you know, that's the sort of childhood I had through the 70s. I was just an expectation of what life was about. But for them to pick up this mantle, I've spoken with more people who've chosen to use that as the impetus to help others than anything else. So for you, living in a world like that, especially in the coaching space, how do you think we benefit from having that network and that community of like-minded people?
Oh, it's magic. It really, really is. And you've even had a couple of my beautiful people in my network as guests on your podcast as well. It is powerful. It really is, because you're not alone. And if there's something that I can't help somebody with, you know, I'll have someone pop into my mind of who I can reach out to either refer the person to or reach out and ask for advice from them. And also, to the extent of, if I do have things pop up in my world, which we all do, we all have things, I have some really amazing people that I can reach out to, and they're there for me. And, you know, recently I went through some big stuff, and it was interesting because it was pointed out to me that if that had happened years ago, I would have spiraled back into the world of self-harm and been in bed for a week and probably intoxicated for most of those days. Instead, it was a good snotty cry for half a night, and I was a bit sad the next day. I actually did cancel my day, my clients, because I didn't have the capacity to support others at that time, and I went and got a pedicure.
Self-care.
It was. And although during the pedicure I was like, come on, I just want to go home to bed. Oh. But it was, so much has changed, and using the tools that I've learnt along the way, it's just so powerful. And then having those people in my network, I know they've got me. And we've got each other, because it goes around. Yeah.
You mentioned a lot about the potential and community throughout this conversation and the support you've received. How has it changed, even in the time you've been a coach? Are you seeing growing numbers of people that need that support?
Oh, absolutely. And the coaching industry is seriously taking off as well. And I need to remind myself not to compare to others, because we all do have our strengths ultimately, and I'm not for everyone, and that's okay, because I don't need to be. You know, I'm not everyone's, what do they say, not everyone's cup of tea, but that's all right. I'm a coffee.
Me too. A dark milky one.
Yeah, a bit of froth too. And it's funny, I actually have a running joke, because I've struggled with my weight throughout my life ultimately, and I like to describe, I tend to describe myself as the beach ball, because people, and not in a negative way, people are always like, oh, you're so bright and bubbly, and I'm like, I'm not always like that, but I'm a bit like a beach ball, because, you know, everyone's happy when there's a beach ball being thrown around and you're happy and you're laughing, but have you ever held a beach ball in the pool under the water and then you let it go and it comes up and it smacks you in the face? I'm a bit like that. So
I love that analogy.
And it is. It's just like, I'm bip, bam, here's Bob.
That's fresh and fun, Bob. Yeah. And I'm getting to see that today. I think there's a lot more of you to get to know. Mm. And before we wrap today, I really need to mention the t-shirt you're wearing. I love it. The Next Generation, Strength, Vision and Legacy. Now, that's part of NAIDOC 2025.
Yes.
Beautiful. I love it.
Yes. That I'm encompasses proud Torres Strait woman.
For you, I mean, how much does that culture bleed into your life, and how does it tether you or anchor you?
It's interesting, because when I was So as I shared earlier, my parents had split up before I was born. So I grew up not really knowing much about my family or my culture. However, when I was hospitalised in 2015, I was having what others would refer to as hallucinations. And it was interesting because when I was in the hospital, I just kept having these dreams. And they then sent in a cultural liaison officer, and we had really great chats, and we shared that often when we're in that, you know, the dark night of the soul kind of era going on, it was almost that calling, and it really came to life then, and I embraced my cultural community and heritage and practices, and it's just beautiful. So when we talk about grounding and things like that, if you're struggling with your mental health, get out in nature. I really do connect to the ocean and the beach and nature in general, because that's, and I just totally get into, like, let my soul call. So yeah, we've got the coming of the light ceremony, which is the traditional Torres Strait ceremony in honor of when religion came to the Torres Strait, and I just immerse myself in the culture and the people, and you feel just so, even if you don't directly know somebody, you feel connected with them, and that's, It's an unspoken, I want to say, bond. Yeah, and I feel like I belong. I belong. It's just beautiful, and that's what we all need.
It's so important, yeah. It really is, yeah. To feel like you belong. And I reflected even on some of the things you said about your childhood, and I felt this kindred, you know, thing between the two of us, because we grew up in a similar time and I had very similar experiences. So from one kindred spirit to another, thank you so much for joining me today.
My absolute pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Let's do it again.
Yeah, we've got so much more to talk about.
I think we do.
And especially in the space, I often have people say to me, Barb, why don't you do work for Red Nose, or just, you know, support bereaved parents? And I mean, the answer is absolutely do. If anyone knows someone who's impacted by the loss of a baby, oh my gosh, reach out. I will drop everything to support them, because I also do suicide intervention work and postvention support. But for me, all the stuff that happened after losing Charlie is because of losing Charlie. So that's why. But this year I'm actually organising a big fundraiser for Red Nose Day, which is the 28th of August, I think, off the top of my head.
Fantastic. So, yeah. Well, I'd love to do something. Whatever we can to help. And if you need anybody to assist you, I've been doing events for the last 20 years, so I'd be more than happy to help.
No, that's how
out.
I met you. Thank you so much.
Cheers, and look forward to our next chat.
Yes, thank you.
Integrated mental wellness coach Barb Hill providing some insight into her lived experience of trauma and the methods that have worked for her. The information provided is the personal opinion of my guest and is not intended to be professional, medical, or legal advice. You should seek expert consultation from an independent healthcare professional. If you'd like to know more about Barb and her work, you'll find those links in the show notes. You can connect with me through my website, where you'll find contacts, my early childhood approved picture books, and social media platforms. I'm Kim Clyden. Until next week, remember to be the change you want to see in the world.